I started to pick up on the fact that most cyclists are very on and off strength training. And when they do strength train, they go actually too hard. And I think it's because cyclists are comfortable with the pain that comes along with exercise and pushing yourself. And the thing is, none of these people who are giving you this advice go on a 3-hour ride the next day, period.
Yeah.
And so that's what became apparent, is that all of these cyclists are training like people who don't ride.
It's showtime, everybody! Showtime!
You've been living in a dream world, Neo. Yeah. This is the world as it exists today.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Listen, we talking about practice.
Hey, Pete, on the dude's rug.
Donnie, you're out of your element.
I see, you think this has nothing to do with you.
Don't ever trash talk Black Jesus.
This is the Adventure Stash with Payson McKelvin.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us today. You'll probably know at this point that here at the Adventure Stash, we don't spend a lot of time with kind of the training advice sort of genre of podcast, but we do spend some time getting kind of close today, although it is mixed in with plenty of heartfelt stories from our guest Derek Teal as well, such as breaking down at the dinner table in tears when he's looking down the barrel of making some big life decisions that puts him where he is today, which is one of the most sought after strength coaches in cycling. I've been wanting to catch up with this guy for quite a while, and he did not disappoint. He's super well spoken, was really generous with all of his knowledge. And I pretty much let my own athletic curiosities guide the conversation. So at times it gets pretty technical, but I think there will be something in here for everyone. So enjoy. I want to say a thank you to actually a mutual sponsor of Derek's and mine, Garmin. They just came out with their new Neo 3M smart trainer that really changes the game. I got a few days on this trainer before we left Durango for the year, and it really impressed. It's super quiet. It has a new magnet motor that minimizes vibration, delivering extraordinarily quiet trainer ride feel. Although it does have this really fun built-in feature when you're riding Zwift where there's intentional vibration if you're riding on any of the off-road segments in Zwift, which is super fun. Improved power accuracy, tracks performance and progress with reliable, consistent measurement, including power, speed, and cadence, with accuracy to within 1% across the board. Also a more comfortable ride. It has a new built-in multi-directional, goes left and right as well as forward and back, that lets you ride in a more natural position and helps you train more effectively. The new built-in motion plates give you a more comfortable and realistic ride feel. Plus, you can toggle them on and off whenever you like. It also has dynamic inertia. This features compensation for weight, speed, and angle of inclination to make the ride more realistic. I love this trainer. If you're interested in it, go to Garmin.com to learn more. Big thanks to Derek for coming on the show today and Garmin for supporting, and I'll catch you after the show. Okay, so before we dive into all the stuff I really want to talk about, because I have a bunch of personal curiosities. Of course, we'll talk a lot about strength training. That's kind of your bread and butter and one of the areas that you're having the most impact and what you're known for. And I think probably like a lot of cyclists, I've sort of been all over the map with it personally. You know, I've gone through different phases. I've worked with some different coaches. I've convinced myself that I should do one thing, and then within a year convinced myself to do something else. So I actually have a lot of personal curiosities, which I'm excited to get into. But
sweet,
before we talk about all that, I think we should do a little bit of groundwork about where in the world you are, who you are, what your background is, all that sort of thing, just so people actually who don't know who you are believe you when you tell them things later in the episode.
Perfect. yeah, that's great.
Other than a super sweet gym podcast studio, where are you?
I'm in Northern California. I'm right in between Sacramento and Tahoe in the suburbs.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Right on. Are you from there originally?
I am. Yeah, I'm actually living currently in my hometown. And
no way.
I moved around quite quite a bit up and down California, especially when once I became a trainer. I was at different gyms up and down the state, but ended up coming back here. And since having kids and a family and being close with my parents, and my wife is super close with her family, it's been great. I love it. And The riding is incredible, so nothing to complain about.
Yeah. I've heard that. Tahoe is amazing. I haven't been on that side before, but that whole zone seems incredible. And Lachlan actually just moved kind of in that neck of the woods, a little further inland, but...
Not much, though. So I'm in Roseville, which is... It's, I kid you not, at the base of the foothills. And literally, if I go west on a ride, it's flat. If I go right, I'm in hills in 5 minutes. And I could actually climb to Auburn, where Lachlan is, in about 30, 45 minutes. And those roads, I think those are the most underrated roads to ride. They're so incredible. In fact, Nielsen Palace is from Roseville. And I've done a few rides with him. And he says, he's like, man, it's hard to beat this zone because there's so many options. You have canyons. It's constantly rolling. It's beautiful. So it's a really good spot. A lot of guys from Tahoe in the winter come down here and ride.
Cool. Yeah, it seems like that area might get overshadowed kind of by the Marin Headlands and all the really famous zones. But it seems like the riding is on par, but with way fewer people a lot of times.
I think so. That's the vibe that I get. Maybe fewer hitters. There's a lot of riders out here, though.
Yeah. I mean, fewer drivers and everything. Just fewer people, like less traffic.
Definitely. Less traffic than the Bay Area. Definitely.
Yeah. Anyway, so one thing that I think is really fun and intriguing about you is I've noticed there are a lot of people that kind of work in your strength training, strength coaching, functional strength space who kind of dabble in the sports that they're trying to help athletes in. You know, they work in strength and conditioning first, and then maybe they just kind of dip a toe into bike riding or dip a toe into whatever else. And it sounds like you kind of did it in the opposite direction. Like you were a cyclist and then you got into strength and conditioning. And that really became your biggest passion or what occupies most of your time. And I think that's it's a really kind of unique trajectory that I'd like to talk about a little bit. And I'd love if you'd give us some background kind of on your own racing history, because I know you got to quite a high level and you still compete at a high level. But just give us that story of how you went from, I think it was gravity racer, to what you're doing today.
Yeah, what's interesting about that sort of full circle story is there was such a big gap where none of the two worlds did connect. And I was in the general health and fitness industry for like 7 years before I really started Dialed Health and kind of brought things back together. So I started out downhill racing growing up, really on the dirt jump bike, building jumps, wanted to be Red Bull Rampage, looked up to Kyle Strait. And I was building myself mulch piles when I was 14 and learning backflips in a field by myself. I mean, so sketchy. No, if my son was doing this now, I'd be like, you're psycho. But I was getting up to Tahoe. I was doing downhill races at North Star and actually really progressed through the ranks in downhill racing. Had a lot of success as a junior. Ended up racing for Yeti Cycles on their national team and worked up to my first pro season officially, where I ended up tearing my ACL and kind of had this spiral out of the sport, which led me to strength and conditioning. Because right before tearing my ACL, I was introduced to strength coaches and nutritionists and all the support that comes along with a quality team. And I started getting more interested in it because it was the first time someone, for example, with the nutrition, it was the first time someone told me that I should eat tomatoes or I should eat black beans, or I never even considered that. Like I grew up on Reese's Puffs and Hot Pockets. And so for me, I never had a problem eating enough food and I probably ate a lot more, like 8 Krispy Kreme donuts every Saturday morning kind of thing. Which has helped me with sort of an iron gut. I think now that I've gotten more into endurance riding and done some 24-hour rides, I actually think it's been a benefit. But that showed me that there's this whole other side to performance. And when I wasn't able to ride, I was still able to train. And I also had other influences growing up. My dad was always on me about push-ups and pull-ups, and he's a SWAT team guy. So for me, it was embedded, I think, in my subconscious. I just grew up watching him work out, and we had pull-up bars. And so I can't say that there was no, support there just growing up. But it was like by the time that injury came around, I was still questioning whether or not downhill racing was sort of my real purpose. And so all of that compiled into me being like, you know what? I don't know what I'm doing right now, but I'm going to become a personal trainer and try it out and kind of go from there. So I ended up stopping racing, which was very painful, I will say, because I honestly didn't know if I could be happy without being a racer. I grew up and that's all I wanted to do. It's all I cared about. And I had a lot of support. And to be honest, I was so close that it wasn't this far off dream. You know, it's like you're right there. So it was a very hard decision to make. And so becoming a trainer was weird because I felt like I almost lost my identity. Yeah. And I was doing this training thing in a gym, just helping people generally work out, lose weight, everything that comes with a personal trainer you'd see walking around a gym. And I started training down at Equinox in Santa Monica. And that's really shaped a lot of the foundation of my training philosophy now. It was amazing. It took the professionalism to another level. And what was cool about that area was that the riding is really good. And so at that time, I got my first trail bike, and I got a Santa Cruz Nomad, you know, gravity dropper post. Like, first time I could go out and actually ride more so for endurance. But I still had that downhill flavor. And so I started falling in love with riding again. And pretty soon I felt like I had this unfinished business because I stepped away from racing at a time that didn't feel 100% right. And so I started
to have closure.
Exactly. I felt like I needed closure. And what's tough too is that all the downhill skill growing up, racing dual slalom, dirt jumping, pump tracks, I mean, that's all I did every day. So I got on the trail bike and I got up to speed quick. And because I had been doing a lot of general strength conditioning, my fitness came around pretty quick as well. And so that's when the ideas start flowing. And I think a lot of competitive athletes know there's just days where you're like, oh, I'm all in. I'm going for the dream. You know, and that those days started happening. So at the time I was a full-time trainer, ended up moving back to Northern California, working for boot camp gyms, doing one-on-one, all sorts of training for work. But then I started enduro racing, and I was competitive with some of the top dudes in the country. And I was riding with them between transfers, and they knew I was a trainer. So like Marco Osborne, for example, awesome rider from my area, he'd be like asking me some training questions. And I realized, I was like, wow, dude, some of these top riders in the country still have all these questions about strength. And I was getting them more and more frequently. And so it felt really natural for me to put out a program for these riders particularly. And so the first program I wrote was the off-season enduro program, which is still on my platform now. And at the time I wrote it, I was in the thick of enduro racing, and I was doing well. You know, West Coast Series, Cal Enduros, a lot of top fives, you know, winning stages, very competitive. But I had given myself this timeline with enduro for the closure where I said, you know what, if I can't produce a full ride contract in 2 years of pursuing this with all of my history, I need to move on. And so I ended up moving back in with my parents. This was like right before I got married. And I told them that I told them what I was doing. They knew I was training full time. I was like, hey, I need some closure with racing. I'm going to full send it for these 2 years. And that was sort of my deadline. And so and it ended up putting out that program online. And I guess, long story short, it was the first time I had also made money online, which was very interesting. And I sold my first program overnight. And I remember waking up and going in for a 5 a.m. training session and be like, whoa, like someone bought this program, you know, for $120 or whatever it was at the time. And that like that really sparked something in me. And at the same time, I'm doing so much self-development, podcast, I'm reading books like crazy, and just trying to get myself to another level of business, of performance. And at the same time, I started riding road because I needed that base of fitness for enduro. That's when the interest of more endurance style riding came into play, and I started riding road consistently. And also, as my life got a little bit busier, it was such a it's so accessible. From my front door in the suburbs, I can go out and ride these amazing roads, and I don't have to drive an hour and a half to get to the good trails to actually train. And so all of these things were kind of happening and pushing me in the direction of dialed health without me knowing it. So ended up doing really well with enduro, but not at the point where I needed to be if I wanted to keep going, and decided to just draw a line in the sand. I was getting married at the end of that year, and I literally remember on my wedding day kind of looking around and being like, dude, I'm done messing around. Like, I need to, I've always been such a dreamer, and I really need to become a doer, period. And so I followed through with my 2-year limit, and the next season I did a couple enduro races and stayed in the scene because I really wanted to be there. I made so many friends and connections. And what's funny is that became my core demographic for dialed health as well. And at that time, got married. I have my own training studio at this point, and I've built up my own business and broken away from all the other gyms I'm working for. And I'm still training the general public. You know, I had clients that were high level MotoGP racers, and I had clients that were high level cyclists, but I also had clients that were 400 pounds that I was working with, you know, I had a 40-year-old woman who had never done a push-up in her life. And I had this crazy span of people I was working with, all of which I just have to note is insanely gratifying. Like, watching someone do their first push-up is one of the coolest things ever, or taking someone who's 400 pounds that literally doesn't believe they can strength train and getting them to do a legit strength circuit is one of the coolest things ever. And I actually miss that a lot, but I was still making progress selling these programs and started dropping more, and pretty soon was like, I need to have a platform so that instead of people buying these individual programs, they can access more for less, because, you know, in 4 months you got to move on to something else. And so then we go into 2020. At this point, I had about 20% of my income online, but everything was still in person. And when things shut down and I had to close the doors, I was like, you know what? This is the time to go all in on the platform. And I'm making it sound way more glamorous than it was. Like, I literally was crying at the dinner table to my family. I was so scared. And I, you know, my wife, I had a 1-year-old. My wife was pregnant with twins. I have the studio overhead. And, you know, it was just like a lot to take on for me at the time. And so I just started going more in on dialed health being strength training for cyclists. And it's crazy, but when I really, really committed to the niche of our sport, that's when the growth online started to happen. And I think that's the biggest recommendation I tell for any trainer that really wants to focus on a group of people, is that you have to 100% commit to it to stand out, because it's so hard to build a broad audience online. You have, in my experience, you have to start being that person for this group of people, and then you can start branching out a little. And without enduro racing, and without, I guess, needing to be at all these events, that's when I really started riding a lot of road and really started focusing on the endurance side of the sport. And so it really wasn't until that time where I started picking up the gravel bike, going to gravel races, and just doing all things drop bar and endurance. Getting on an XC bike was something completely new for me. And it was insane, the body position and all that change. But those things have led to me doing that primarily full time. I don't really ride as much gravity, even though I love it. I still take my XC bike down like Black Diamond stuff all the time. It's the best. But it's really been the whole trajectory to get to where I am now, where it's full time online, strength training for cyclists, endurance focus, and that's dialed health.
Yeah, amazing. That was a really good synopsis. I have so many follow-up questions. One thing I'm curious about, though, is when you were in that infant stage of all this, and you're kind of not sure which direction you were going to go, you were in that 2-year phase that you described where you're still thinking about racing enduro at a high level, and you would be riding between stages with guys, and they would be basically interrogating you for you know, free advice about strength and conditioning. What do you think set you apart in terms of being informed at that point? Do you feel like you were already innovating at that stage and already offering something that people couldn't really find somewhere else? Or was there just such a need that you just had the basics and people wanted that?
I hate to say that it was both, but it really was. So I'm not going to say that I was innovating, because the way that I program is very much how I was taught at Equinox. And thankfully, that type of programming ended up being very suitable for improving human movement, sports performance, total body movements, a lot of core. And that happens to work really well with cyclists. And it's partially because if you hammer a body part in a split routine, let's just say you go in for leg day, or all of your workouts are, you know, chest and back, and it's a typical bodybuilder split, it's too much volume on a body part and you don't feel good when you ride your bike, period. Mm. And so it was sort of luck that I had really adapted to and been taught that type of training at the same time these riders were telling me what they were doing. And I'm like, no, this doesn't feel right. Oh, okay, so you went and did this workout. How did it feel? Oh, you couldn't ride the next day. And so I was sort of putting it all together. And I think that, in combination with my professional experience, you know, 10 years gravity racing, literally, you know, I'm out at Yeti team camps with Jared Graves, one of the greatest all-around cyclists of all time on the mountain bike. So yeah. I'm with the best pros in the world. And then I go into the general fitness industry and I learn this complete new way of thinking without expecting to bring it back into cycling. And I think I just happened to go the route that was super quote unquote functional. Mm-hmm. And I think that those two things, it was like 10 years on the bike, 10 years in the gym. Well, yeah, it's been over that now, but, and then at the same time, talking to some of the best riders in the country and in the world and putting it all together. So it was a little bit of everything at the time.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately it's seeing a need and being willing to fill the need, because it's hard to put your flag in the ground and say, I am this, I'm doing that, because there's a lot of accountability that comes along with it, especially online. But that was the bold thing that I was willing to do and that I'm still willing to do. You know, even some of these rides I've done, like, dude, Double Everest, for months before that, I was like, on this day, at this time, I'm gonna ride up and down this hill until I double Everest, and I'm gonna film the whole thing and you're gonna see it. And like that pressure, that pressure is a lot, but it's almost what needs to be done, I think, to for me to stand out the way that I'd like to, and bring eyeballs to the business. So yeah, it was a little bit of everything, and it was really just seeing the need and feeling it.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so let's actually talk about some of the strength and training specifically here. Did you start to notice any trends of what was missing from strength and conditioning programs? It goes without saying that things are probably missing from more recreational riders, but from the top level riders, like, you don't have to call Jared out specifically, but just riders of that level. Did you go away to Equinox and then kind of pick up some things and go like, whoa, there's some gaps here. Like, I can help these riders in this, and this category.
Absolutely.
So what did you start to pick up on?
Well, I started to pick up on the fact that most cyclists are very on and off strength training, even the gravity guys. And when they do strength train, they go actually too hard. And I think it's because cyclists are comfortable with the pain that comes along with exercise and pushing yourself. And the thing is too, at this time, I was training myself and experimenting with all of this too. So anytime I thought about something, I would get the feedback from people and I would literally go and do it. And as a gym guy, I wanted to do 3-4 days a week in the gym year round. Yeah. I wanted to bury my legs when I went into the gym because it felt good. Yeah. And you feel like it's such obvious progress. You know, you go and destroy your legs and you're like, boom, that's, I just did it. You know, I worked hard. My legs are definitely going to get stronger, but it's crazy the aftermath that brings. And the thing is, most people that give you advice to train super hard like that, and don't get me wrong, I have intensity in my programs and it's the volume that's very controlled, which we'll talk about in a second. But if you go out and destroy yourself in the gym, for example, like a CrossFit workout, and I want people to know I'm a huge fan of CrossFit. I love following it. I think it's an amazing sport and does amazing things for people, but it's just not a good fit for cyclists because of the intensity and the lower body volume. And you think, oh, yeah. Well, high intensity, a lot of leg work, that'd be good. Well, none of these people who are giving you this advice go on a 3-hour ride the next day, period.
Yeah.
There, a lot of these guys-
Or like, later the same day.
Yes. And so I see people looking to bodybuilder split programs, to CrossFit programs, and even some like kettlebell stuff, where it's like, that is an incredible workout if you didn't have to ride. And so that's what became apparent, is that all of these cyclists are training like people who don't ride. And they're doing the right things, but they're doing usually doing too much of it. And the cycle is, I get really, this is my example of the person. I get really motivated to strength train. I go to all these strength training resources. I see 5x5 squat programs. I see German volume training. I see 10x10 splits. I see bodybuilder splits. I'm watching bodybuilding, CBUM on YouTube. And again, all things that I love, but they go and do it and it feels really good in the session. And then the next day they're so unbelievably sore and their rides suck for the next week. So they wait a week and then they do it again. And they do that for a couple months. And they're like, you know what? I shouldn't be strength training. And that's what they think. But then 6 months later, they kind of get the bug again. And it was just this crazy cycle. So it was like, how can I give people strength programming that doesn't put them in this situation? And how do they do it consistently year round? And so thankfully, because of the programming I learned at Equinox and their push on the 7 effective movements, which is something I've implemented a lot, is that when you do total body workouts, it doesn't give you the opportunity as much to overdo one specific body part, where you could still make a lot of good progress if your frequency's there, which is 2 sessions per week minimum. But if you're going to go in for a total body day, you're not going to do 5 different leg only exercises because you don't really have time. And when you do circuits or combine different movements where it's a lower body, upper body, and then a total body, or you're doing a couple core movements back to back that are total body, the way that you get such better neural adaptation. So you learn how to use your body in unison and it becomes so much more efficient. Like when you can brace and breathe at the same time, when you can, let's just say you're doing a Palloff press. This is a cable press where you're standing with the handle in the center of your chest, the weight's pulling you from the side and you're just pressing the weight out in front of you. Well, if you can brace your leg and just dig it into the ground and get good torque through your hip, and then your obliques are firing and your shoulder and your chest are all working at the same time. But what's crazy is the whole outside of your body is not doing anything. When you can separate your body and you know how to control your muscle groups like that, you become so much more efficient in anything that you do. But for cyclists, it means that you can have way better firing patterns on the bike. And you can also rest muscle groups that aren't being used at that time. And you can turn them on quickly when you need them. So overall, cycling economy just improves so much more. You just become so much more efficient because it's not like you're full gas and then not doing anything. It's way easier to control your body. Sorry, that was a little bit of a tangent, but that is how the programming differentiates itself. And even the people at Equinox, they weren't teaching me this so that I can integrate it with endurance athletes, but I've realized that this is a really good way for people to strength train year round. You can still control the volume, still control the intensity through periodization, but you really learn how to not overdo it. And that's the trick.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, so I feel like within cycling, there's kind of, and obviously this has evolved a lot over the last few years, but there's, correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I think about it is there's almost 3 camps. There's like people that know they should do quote unquote traditional core strengthening because of the whole build a strong foundation, you'll be able to produce more power thing, which is like the most basic sort of perspective, I feel like, which probably isn't wrong, but that's kind of like level one. And then sometimes you hear people, like the other categories people throw out, injury prevention. You know, if you're a little bit more muscle mass, if you know your connective tissue is operating a little bit more functionally, maybe you put on a little bit more bone density, those sorts of things that will help just help you be more durable and help you, if you crash, be less likely to be injured. And then kind of the third level, which it seems like not everyone is either aware of or totally bought into yet, is what you just touched on, which is that real lifting, like real strength training, not just the little planks and whatever else, like real full body strengthening, makes you a more efficient rider. And the areas that I've heard referenced in that regard are muscular endurance for sure. And then also, like you said, just the firing patterns of your muscles. So literally like how the electrical system of your body communicates to the actual kinetic like movement, what your muscles are doing, like the neuromuscular firing patterns.
Yes.
That gets a lot more efficient. And there's plenty of research now to back that up. What I personally, I'll be totally transparent. Like some people might be surprised how, I'm sure you won't be, based on everything you've shared in terms of your own history of working with athletes and like your own discovery process with high level athletes. But some listeners might be surprised. I have so much to learn on this front still, and don't have 100% confidence in like doing the right thing, or I do this every year type thing. So one area that I'm curious about is the lift heavy versus maybe slightly more traditional cyclists, like lift lighter, do more reps sort mm-hmm. of thing. And my understanding is there is some research, correct me if I'm wrong, but there is some research that actually lifting a bit heavier does have, and I'm not talking about crazy, I'm not talking about trying to build into like crazy one rep maxes or whatever, but lifting a bit heavier and lower rep than is maybe traditional in cycling actually has a lot more transfer to the bike than at face value might be logical or might you might think. Can you talk a little bit about what the science is saying and just what style, if someone wants to build towards a far off goal of making strength training a part of being a better cyclist, maybe what that journey can look like and what a top level cyclist that's doing it right might be doing. And then we can talk about kind of the day-to-day things that people can do to get started maybe.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the best way to look at the rep ranges and different stimuluses you can get through training is to know that you need all of it. And you need all of it at some point throughout the year. And a lot of reasons why some cyclists are very adamant about low rep, high weight is because you can build a lot of strength without putting on excessive muscle mass. Because once you get the reps low enough and the volume low enough, it doesn't put on mass the same way that a lot of volume can. And so that's
counterintuitive.
Yes. But the problem with it is that it really is hard on your body. And this is one of those things where it's the reality of, okay, you look at the science and you say, oh, well, if I go under 5 reps for this lift, I'm going to get stronger, but I likely won't put on that much mass. And it is very interesting that your body is even capable of that, but a lot of it has to do with the firing patterns. And a lot of it has to do with muscle recruitment and the fact that a lot of our muscle is very dormant and we don't use it to the extent that we can. But it's the volume that really puts on mass. So this has become a thing where people want to integrate that heavy lifting, but you have to work up to it. And with that comes phases of a little bit of higher volume so that for one, you don't get injured. But for two, you can handle it and not be too burnt out. The thing is, you can't lift heavy year round as a cyclist, period. If you are cycling at a high level, and I'll be honest, let's say that you don't cycle at a high level, but you have a 100-mile Fondo that you plan on doing in summer, weeks leading up to that, you shouldn't be lifting sub 5 reps because you're going to be a little stiffer. There's going to be fatigue that comes from that, which is inevitable. I don't know what else to say, but unless you start strength training like that 3-4 days a week, every single week, your body doesn't adapt to it to that extent to where it's not going to have some negative impact. But if you're doing that in the off season, when you are putting in more base miles, when you're not as concerned about your performance at this time, it's pretty ideal because you can still build a stronger body. And the repercussions of building a stronger body and the impact it truly has which people don't talk about. Like, they glamorize, they're like, oh my gosh, yeah, sub 5 reps. This is so, but it's like, have you done that? You know how stiff you are, like, once you do it? Oh, did you do? Yeah. And so there is absolutely a way to integrate it. And I think it's ideal that people can load up heavier, but it's something that you should do a couple times throughout the year. And this could be your off season. You know, for us in the US right now, it's a very good time to be lifting heavier. If you have big gaps in your season in the summer, for someone who's not racing full time, and let's just say you have 3 months between a couple of events, or maybe even 4 months, you could go through another cycle of loading up a little bit. But with that is going to come working through other rep ranges as well. So building a base of muscular endurance means that you're going to be lifting less weight, and you're typically going to be doing exercises that are unilateral, or I guess by nature, you can't really load them up as much if you really want to build a solid foundation. So it's like, let's just say reps around 16, single arm dumbbell press. These types of things are not what you're going to do for your maximum strength, but they're really going to help build your mind muscle connection and build a foundation. And then you can slowly go to hypertrophy, which is kind of that sweet spot muscle growth rep range, which, to be honest, I think is the best rep range throughout the year if your overall volume of each exercise is low. So for example, if I'm doing 8 to 10 reps on a dumbbell bench press, and that's my only horizontal push movement, which means like chest exercise, it's not going to really destroy me that much. I'm not going to put on crazy mass because I'm doing it once a week, but I'm still either maintaining my strength or getting stronger. And so I don't think people should be afraid of that hypertrophy rep range. And you know what's interesting is that a lot more cyclists would like to put on a little bit of muscle. Yeah. I would say in the general population, just a little, like, oh yeah, if I could, you know, feel a little stronger in my upper body, and if I put on 5 pounds and it was actually muscle, I'd probably be okay with that. And typically when they do that, they just feel so much better, typically. And especially if you're doing it with a well-rounded program, you know, if you're building your posterior chain and you have bigger hamstrings, bigger glutes, a bigger back, these things can make you feel so much better on the bike that the 5 pounds, you don't even worry about it anymore. That's a whole other rabbit hole we can go down about the whole power to weight thing.
Yeah. I do want to talk about that for sure.
Yeah. And so the hypertrophy rep range isn't something to stray away from as long as your overall volume is under control. And I want people to know that if your real goal is muscle mass, you should, like, if your number one goal is muscle mass, I want to put on as much muscle mass as possible, then you probably shouldn't do my programs. Like, you should do a split routine like a bodybuilder and train in the gym 4 days per week. And by the way, when you see the volume of a true muscle growth program, you'll realize very quickly it's so far from like even what I program that, and what's crazy is that it's still hard to put on muscle with that type of program. You still have to make sure your protein is on point. You still have to make sure you're recovering. It's so much volume. I mean, it's like five different exercises.
It seems like those folks just live in the gym.
They are going to isolate muscle groups, which again, I have no problem with, but it's like, if I'm going to do five different tricep isolation exercises and I'm going to do 4 sets of 12 of each. I mean, think about that compared to trying to do a total body workout. It's wildly different. But when you go through a hypertrophy phase, like I would program at a reasonable volume for cyclists, then you can go to more max strength. This is where your body's ready to handle a bigger load. You're still going to feel the fatigue from it. And then you can go into more of a max strength power phase where you're doing sub 5 reps. You're doing very, very explosive movements. Maybe you're doing like PAP. It's post-activation potentiation. So this is where you do a very explosive plyometric movement right after a heavy lift. And the idea is that you have more muscle recruitment and you could be more explosive. So, you know, trap bar, deadlift, straight into box jumps. And so this is how you would program and periodize a winter training or a training block where you're less focused about your on the bike performance in that time. With that said, once you go through a cycle of that, and if you start upping your riding volume, you get into event season, you really can't have that same breakdown of your body that you need to get stronger, because it's going to affect your performance on the bike. And this is when a maintenance program is ideal. And this is also a main issue I see with cyclists is off-season training, doing it well, and then stopping once the season starts. And I think it's because of that idea that I mentioned earlier. It's like, if I don't go so hard and kill myself in the gym, it's not worth it. But for you to do a strength workout, let's just say at a RPE of 5, then, and you do that consistently throughout the summer, the likeliness that you'll maintain the strength you gained is outrageously higher than if you just stopped. If you just stopped, by the time you start that program again the next season, you will be like
back at
just
zero.
Starting over, back at zero, maybe even less. Who knows what happened during the year? So at the minimum, do a maintenance program. And that's funny enough. You know, the goal is not to just like plug my product, but like I'll give you an example of why I program and have the available programs that I do. Off-season road program is periodized, like I mentioned. You could take that straight into the band only program. You literally use one 30-pound band for every movement. You can travel with it, but this is still the same movements, just way lighter load, a little bit more complex, a little more focused on stability. And now you can do that throughout your season and you stay activated and you actually maintain. So that like that whole thing is the next point that cyclists blow it on, is that maintenance phase. Like, maintenance is so underrated. I mean, I'm sure that you know at your level of every gain is marginal for you at this point, period. So, and I even find myself there with where I'm at. I'm nowhere near your level on the bike. So it's like, maintenance is underrated. You know that, okay, at the minimum, I just don't want to get worse. If I get better, that's a bonus. And so I think people need to value maintenance a little bit more, and we need to like make it a little bit more sexy, you know? I'm like trying to do that.
No, that's awesome. And I heard you say actually in a different podcast you did that so much, probably the most important thing is, what are you actually going to do? What is actually realistic to pull off consistently? Because that is what matters most. And that's not just strength training, that's on bike training, that's anything you're trying to be good at. I mean, forget athletics, even like, what can you do consistently? And so that's where probably guidance from someone, it's going to sound like I'm really trying to get you some new clients right now, but that's probably where working with someone like you really, really comes into play, is just that guidance of, okay, here's my lifestyle, here's what I can realistically do, and maximizing that available time. I want to do kind of two little thought experiments here, two scenarios. For someone who does have time, someone who either does have a home gym or can go to a gym, scenario A. Scenario B would be someone that travels a ton, has very limited time. Maybe they have a family, maybe they can't get to a gym, don't have a home gym, some like very basic pieces of equipment that they can pick up at Amazon or whatever on a budget. What would that look like from a maintenance phase? So athlete A, how much would someone that has time, has access to free weights, all the different weights of kettlebells, whatever, what does an in-season maintenance program look like? And you don't have to go into details, but just from a frequency standpoint, maybe duration per session, and then just a general split of like, would you have people do a bunch of squats in the middle of the season still, like you would preseason presumably? Or does that come down a bunch? What does that look like for someone that has the equipment and time?
I would say it's 2 to 3 sessions per week, strength training sessions. All of your strength training sessions should include mobility. So your workout is not just walk in, warm up, lift heavy, leave. You walk in, you do some movement prep, you warm up, you strength train, then you cool down with some static stretching. It's a complete package. I'm a big believer in mid-set mobility. You want to leave your session feeling better than when you started, even on the hard days. If you include that type of framework, it really makes a difference. So there's no reason anyone should be in the gym for more than 90 minutes. I would say perfect case scenario. I think if you're in the gym longer than that, you might just be scrolling Instagram a little bit too much between sets.
Yeah.
And I think that comes with the volume, because you almost need to cap your time to a point so you don't do too much either. Most of my sessions for that scenario would be 60 minutes. And if you really learn the movements and you don't have any type of traffic, sharing weights, or any, your setup's really efficient, you can do it 45 minutes. But the minimum is 2 days per week, and that's based off of super compensation and just your adaptation to training. And it's the reason why 2 days per week is so important, because essentially if you do one session per week, it's barely going to maintain you, barely. And also you're going to be more sore. Your body's just not as adapted to it. And so that's why mid-season, I still encourage two sessions per week. Now, if you don't have an insane amount of riding volume, doing three sessions per week is more realistic. But honestly, if someone, like, let's just say this case scenario, let's say you are doing more than 12 hours a week on the bike, I would really start questioning whether or not doing a third session is ideal. It could be during the off season, if you're base training. You know, the one athlete I work with professionally is Lance Haidt. He's my sponsored athlete. And we're going into a bigger base phase where he could do 3 days a week of strength. But again, that's like one time per year. He's doing a lot of zone two. We can pull it off. And he's got a lot of strength training history. So it depends on the riding volume. And I would say once you start getting over that 12-hour mark, then you should start questioning 3 days per week. I wouldn't say it's necessary. 2 days your sweet spot, make it count. And here's the deal. Don't miss your sessions. A big thing I preach is I don't miss. I modify. I don't miss. Whether that's a 3 hour ride that turns into 30 minutes on the trainer, whether that's a perfect 60 minute dialed health workout that turns into 10 minutes of movement and a handful of pushups, don't miss your sessions. Embed the habit. And I got to just push back a little bit on what you said about the person who has time versus doesn't. You'll make time if it's important. Period. Period.
Cool. Yeah. So then let's maybe rephrase that to the person who has a complicated schedule, travels a lot. Maybe they travel for work. Maybe they can make time, but what they have time for is 2 30-minute sessions a week, something like that. And they don't have access to a traditional gym. If they, you know, can get some basic equipment that they use in their living room. Actually, you know what? Let's actually make this even more specific. What would you recommend in a travel setup? Like what bands, what little bits of equipment and what exercises would you focus on? And again, you don't have to go into crazy detail here, but just kind of giving some general guidance, I think would be really interesting for folks.
Oh yeah. So with the traveling, it's keeping it simple is the most important thing. And also your body weight and gravity can do wonders. And I think the hardest part about that is the variety of exercises. You can feel like you get limited to doing only a few things because you don't have the equipment to help you. And so what I would say for people who don't have any equipment is, for one, try and get a foam roller. That would be your first thing I would recommend anybody getting. But don't forget that it just takes programming to have a good workout. For example, I have a no equipment flow program, a no equipment HIIT program. There's ways to train your back. There's ways to train your posterior chain without the equipment. And it really just takes a little bit of guidance, I think. So for you to go in a travel situation, I would be very clear about what you are going to do in that situation. So if you're going to a hotel, just find out if they have a gym. If you don't have any equipment, have a programmed bodyweight workout that you can do. And the nice thing about bodyweight is that even if the reps do get high, if you're doing a lot of bodyweight squats, like a lot of lunges, or let's just say a bodyweight Romanian deadlift, a little bit more posterior chain focused, then it's less likely it's going to really mess up your riding because you don't have that load to really just blow up your legs the same way. So you can be a little bit like more comfortable going high reps. I would say keep the pace up, whether that's on a stopwatch or not. But it's the clarity of what to do. You don't want to stand staring at the wall in your hotel being like, what am I about to do? You just want to look at it and go. And again, this is not me just trying to plug, but this is why I make the products that I do, is because I have been in these situations, and there are days where I just use my own programming because I'm like, I can't even think about what I'm going to do. And so anyways, have a plan, be clear on what that equipment availability is, and then just execute it from there. Now, if you can, bringing a single looped band is probably the easiest thing. Rogue makes these things called monster loop bands, and they're incredible. I use the 30-pound one, bring it with me. I have a 3-month program that is periodized with a 30-pound band, and the variety of movements you can do is insane. But again, you have to get more creative, and I think this is when working with a trainer or having a trainer program for you is so important, because it's like, dude, how the heck do I do a 1-hour workout with this one band and actually make it quality? And so it just takes a lot of thought and a lot of experience to program it that way. The more equipment that you have, the more options for variety, the more options, opportunities for progression. And I think that there's a point where people are gonna need that for progressive overload, which is like really how you're gonna make gains. So I'm not gonna sit here and say, oh, bodyweight workouts are good for your whole life. They're definitely better than nothing. And for someone starting at zero, you could roll for a year body weight and wildly change your body. And that's the benefit of beginner gains. But as you get more toward the marginal gains, you're going to need the tools for the job at some point. But again, maybe you go from not having any equipment, and then you get a foam roller and a band, and then you get one kettlebell. Oh, now the kettlebell just opened up another year of progression for you. Oh, you get TRX, you get a pull-up bar. And so this is how you can see it, like how it can be digestible if you're having a hard time with that. If your travel schedule is there's so much friction to getting started. And I feel confident speaking about this because of even my own personal situation. You know, it's like strength training is a huge part of my job, but there's a lot of out of shape trainers because you have a crazy schedule. And, you know, I have a 4-year-old and 2-year-old twins right now. I run my own business. I'm doing my best to stay in the best shape on the bike I can. And this is not me trying to pump myself up. It's just saying that I do relate to these struggles. And I've had so many people in person tell me with the stuff they're dealing with. So I would say that you're not alone with the friction. And I know you can overcome it. As long as you try and implement the habit at a level, I don't want to say do the minimum, but you need to establish this minimum barrier, this boundary where you're like, all right, you know what hits the fan, I am doing this at the bare minimum. Yeah. And so from that, you can build, but you can build that, you can start that bare minimum of consistency, 2 days a week, total body strength, 30 minutes, I think is probably the minimum. I have 20 minutes core sessions. Again, maybe that is even the minimum, but you need to draw the line in the sand and be like, this is at the very minimum what I'm going to do. And from there, you can always build on it. You can always add a little bit more.
Yeah. Cool, man. Dude, I have so many follow-up questions. We're definitely going to need to do another episode. I would love to keep rolling for another 45 minutes, but I have a guy coming over to the house now-ish to shoot some video, I think. But I wish we had more time. What would you say to cyclists that are worried about putting on weight? Because there's this history, obviously, not all of it healthy, of a relationship between weight and cycling performance, power to weight ratio. And I remember hearing a crazy story through the grapevine at one point that Tom Danielson, actually, when he was at the height of his career, would go to the grocery store. And I don't know that I heard this from him, so take it with a grain of salt, but it's definitely within the realm of things World Tour cyclists used to do in the old days. Would go to the grocery store with a backpack so that he didn't have to carry grocery bags with his arms, and he would put his groceries in his backpack so that he wasn't doing work with his arms. I should shoot him a message and fact check this, but You hear crazy stories like that, and whether it's that or you know, any other number of old school roadie stories that obviously that have progressed since then. And I'm sure Tom or whoever else would not say that that's the right way to do it anymore. But we kind of come from that old school, like that old school perspective definitely seeps into the psyche of the greater cycling world a lot of times. In my experience, if you're riding a lot, it's really hard to put on weight. And I remember a phase kind of in like 2016 through 2018 where I was doing a lot of gym stuff, like definitely more than I should have. And I put on video guys definitely hear dogs going crazy.
Oh yeah.
I put on 5 to 7 pounds that I probably didn't need to. And I could, going back, I can see it in photos. I definitely had more upper body. But that was like, I was taking it way, way, way overboard. And my feeling is that if you're doing more in the range that you're talking about, the actual workload that you're talking about, you're unlikely to put on more than, I think you referenced, 5 pounds. And that's really going to be overcome by all of the added benefits that we talked about. Is that kind of the case these days?
Yeah, it is harder to put on muscle than people realize. And I think that story of potentially, whether it's true or not, Tom Danielson, it's funny because part of me loves that. It's like when you see a guy riding a Harley with no helmet, smoking a cigarette. I'm like, I love that. But also I know it's crazy and stupid and I'd never do it. Yeah. But I respect the commitment to the process and the own
it's
belief
serious
system.
Commitment.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Think about the points of contact on your bike. What are they? You have your pedals, your saddle, and you have two hands on the handlebars. Try and go sprint without your arms. Why would you not think that having a little more arm strength is not a benefit to your overall power? Also, mm-hmm. I get people telling me all the time, my triceps are really tired after long days in the saddle. Oh, when I hit hour 4, 5, 6 in a gravel race, my triceps are so tired. Oh, my neck hurts. I can't hold my head up. How do you think that changes? It's not by avoiding holding groceries. And people need to be a little bit more logical with their own thinking. Just remember, there are guys whose only goal in life is to put on muscle and they have a hard time doing it. Keep that in mind. And when you go out for a 3+ hour ride, your body is sort of adapting to that, which is, I don't want to say the opposite of your strength training, but they are competing. They are competing stimuluses and they support each other. But again, the likeliness that you're going to put on significant weight is so low that there's very little risk, in my opinion, especially with the correct programming. Now, with that said, if you're not someone who believes me, I totally understand. I would say start with just activation size exercises alone. So I have a mobility program on my website that basically just helps people find spots they need to correct to get better body alignment. And one of my members, who is a crit racer, Cat 1 crit racer, and he races down in SoCal, he did one workout, and it included testing a squat, doing some foam rolling on his calves, funny enough, and then doing some activation in his hips. So I'm talking like Jane Fonda, lay on your side, doing clamshells.
Mm-hmm.
Like the lightest activation work ever. Like you would never, you can't put on muscle doing this. But yeah. The next day, he got a power PR in his 3-second sprint.
Yeah, yeah.
PR for a Cat 1 yeah. crit racer. Yeah. And the only thing he did different was activation. And some targeted mobility. That's it. So if you are the person who's like, oh no, I can't risk putting on any weight, and even if it's muscle, then number one, I would say, hey, let's make sure your body fat is where it needs to be. That's the first concern. I think there's very little people that could say they don't have some low hanging fruit there. But at the same time, it's like, okay, if I'm gonna put on pure muscle, or if I wanna avoid that, just start with activation. And at least you'll be getting some benefits there in stability and efficiency. And, you know, I think it would be the gateway to a little bit more and a little bit more. And my hope would be that it would lead to some more proper strength training. I guess that's what I would say for that person. I get a million examples. I'm not going to sit here and tell people that you're not going to gain weight. It's like I did a whole video on creatine. Should cyclists take creatine? I think they should, but I'm not going to say. Some people say, oh, it doesn't really put on weight. It does. It pulls water into your muscles. And with that, but it's in your muscles. This is a whole other route I can go down. But it's like, what's the cost benefit? And you have to evaluate that. And you can always stop. You know what I mean? Mm, like mm-hmm. If you're somebody that just somehow is so genetically gifted that you do 2 total body workouts a week and you start looking like a bodybuilder, first off,
Ryan Standish.
I need to talk to him about that.
Well, I love Ryan. He's so funny. He's like, I cannot think about doing a push-up or I just look like a bodybuilder.
Oh,
like,
that's a, okay.
He gets so shredded so quick. And I don't actually think that from a body weight or putting muscle mass on standpoint, like it's actually that way. But it's been a joke for years because he's so just like naturally muscle bound. He's like, I cannot touch weights. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Well, I do hear that. And that's why I'm not, you know, some people have an easier time putting on muscle than others, you know, period. I was going to make a joke basically saying, and maybe this is not what Ryan wants to hear, but if you put on that muscle that easily, you might be in the wrong sport. Like maybe you should be a bodybuilder. You might make a lot more money too. Like jokes aside, like everybody is a little bit different. But if that's really your concern, I don't think you're stupid. I think it's a valid concern for a lot of reasons. But just start with activation, start slow, and see where you go from there. Because I'd be shocked if you didn't feel better. And then you could progress into a little bit more after that, if you wanted.
Yeah, cool. Man, I have so many follow-up questions written down that we unfortunately don't have time for. But the last thing I'd kind of like to touch on is knowing more about you now and kind of where you came from and your trajectory to where you sit today. It is really cool to think about. You've got a big, big following on Instagram. There are lots of people that stay engaged with you and are interested in what you do. You've evolved as an athlete. You know, we didn't talk about like the double Eversting or some of the other big ultra challenges you've done that you documented. I really enjoyed following on your social. When you think back on, I think you said it was early 2020 when you decided to go all in on this thing and you were crying at the dinner table and you had kids coming, recently married or about to be married. What does that feel like? Like what would you go back and tell yourself a handful of years ago, you know, before you kind of hit this inflection point and what you're doing really took off? Do you give yourself time to reflect on that at all?
Yeah, I think I'm giving myself a little bit more time. I would say in the last 6 months, there's been a lot more stability in my life with getting focused and clear on what I need to do and also trying enough things to understanding what is and isn't important. There's less things too. You know, I mentioned earlier, I don't have my in-person training studio. I moved that into my garage. There's just operations that are getting more efficient. So I've had time to kind of reflect on how far things have come that way. But I think that I would tell myself to be more confident in my own motto, which is start moving forward. Like I have two. I have a life motto, you're blessed to be a blessing. And that powers a lot of things that I do. But, you know, start moving forward is the motto for Dialed Health. And it's the idea that you don't have all the answers. You have an idea of where you want to go, but it feels like an impossible gap to get there. But if I had to ask you, what's the one thing you could do right now? What's the one thing you could do today to actually make some progress? I'd be shocked if something didn't come to mind. And sometimes it doesn't even feel like it's that connected. For me, it could be listening to a self-development podcast or reading a book or following through on that email block that I said, I'm going to sit down for an hour and do emails. When you follow through with the promises you make to yourself, that's how you build confidence and you start trusting yourself that you're going to follow through. And when you commit to doing something that is on your mind, just to check it off the list, the process of going through that and accomplishing it is what unveils the next step. You can't think beyond that thing because you don't have the experience from it yet. So for anyone, and this is what I would tell myself, is to continue to start moving forward. Like I had no idea that when I went all in on general health and fitness in the strength training industry, I had no idea that I'd get back on the bike, that I would make things full circle the way that they have. But now I've been fortunate enough to have a job that truly encompasses all of the work I've ever done in my life. All of my professional experience, period, on the bike, off the bike, in the gym, has all culminated into this thing now. And it wasn't intentional, but it's because I committed to start moving forward and I kept doing that next thing. And so I would tell myself that I should be confident in that process going forward. And I think ultimately I wouldn't have taken any of the pain away of developing this and the stuff I still experience, because that's ultimately what shapes you. And it's also what motivates you. I'll tell you, there's nothing like having a bad week to motivate me to be better for the next week. And then when you have that week where everything falls in place and you nail it, that's when you sit back, you take a deep breath and you try and enjoy it. And then you try not to coast for too long. You know, it's like, yeah. So it didn't mean to get so deep on you there for a second, but that's truthfully what I would tell myself. I'm kind of a deep guy.
that's what we do here on this podcast for better or worse. cool, man. Well, man, we need to do another one of these, because I feel like this was a good baseline, and then I have a bunch of follow-up questions that I'd love to ask you at a later date. But yeah. Congratulations on everything. It's really cool to follow your success and see your success. It was funny when we've only met once. It was at Sea Otter back in April, and we're hanging out there at the Garmin tent, and Walter, a good mutual friend of ours who works at Garmin, was just so stoked for you. Like when he introduced you and he was describing, I knew who you were, but he was making sure, you know, it's a Sea Otter. There's so many people meeting that, you know, it's better to play it safe and introduce people, rather than something getting awkward. And he was going on this long thing about, you know, this is Derek of Dialed Health. And he's just like, what he's doing has just gone through the roof recently. I was like, I know. But he had so much pride for your success. Cause I'm sure you guys have talked about your own trajectory and how much hard work you've put in. And, it's really cool to see kind of what you're unlocking for people. And, you know, your story in and of itself of having these ideas and kind of following your nose and taking the leap and doing something that you really love and having it be wildly successful is very cool. But the fact that it serves so many other people too is even that more cool. So hats off to what you're doing. And I look forward to part two at some point, hopefully in the near future.
Thanks. Thank you. Seriously. I feel like I'm going to shed a little thug tear over here. Oh my gosh. No, I really appreciate it. And I will absolutely take you up on that. And I'm going to hold you to coming onto my podcast. So
sure. Yeah. We didn't even talk about the fact that you have a podcast. let's quickly give folks an idea of where they can follow you. So I think you're Dialed Health on Instagram. What's your podcast?
Yeah, so at Dialed Health on Instagram. You can go to dialedhealth.com to see all the programs and the platform. I do have a 7-day free trial for you guys to try out if you want to go, you know, dip your toe in the water a little bit. Hopefully it is a helpful resource for you. And I have the Dialed Health podcast, and that's how you search it. Dialed Health podcast, strength training for cyclists. It's available on all major streaming platforms. And I also have a YouTube channel, which is Dialed Health. You can go and see some of the ride challenges I've done. I have informative videos about body weight exercises, kettlebell, specific things to the bike as well. I'm kind of still trying to find my YouTube flow. That's a hard one to stay consistent with, but we're getting closer. And so, yeah, I think the most active place would probably be Instagram, and hopefully people can get some value out of the podcast as well.
Sweet, man. All right, Derek, I'm sure we'll talk to you again more soon. Thanks for the time.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Hello again, everyone. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Derek. I think, like I referenced in the episode, we will be doing a follow-up. I had so many follow-up questions for him that we just ran out of time for. I think I wrote down more follow-up questions during the conversation than I went into the conversation with, which is always a good sign. So look for more. If you enjoyed that, look for more from Derek in the near future. I also want to say a big thank you to mutual sponsor Garmin, who supported today's episode and just came out with their new Neo 3M trainer. The Tacx Neo 3M trainer is extraordinarily quiet, has an awesome magnet motor that minimizes vibration, except for when you want it. It has a built-in function that's really fun when you're riding Zwift. So if you ride across one of those plank bridges or off-road sections, there's some built-in ride feel there that's very realistic. It also comes with improved power accuracy and a more comfortable ride thanks to the built-in multi-directional movement. It is multi-directional. It goes left and right as well as forward and back. I was really impressed when I jumped on this thing for the first time. It totally changes
the indoor riding experience. Just having that added motion plate movement is super fun and allows for more natural efforts and just a much more natural ride feel. You can toggle that feature on and off if you want. It also comes with dynamic inertia, which compensates for weight, speed, and angle of inclination to make the ride more realistic depending on the rider. To learn more, go to Garmin.com. I also want to say a big thank you to Lily McKelvin for editing and producing the show, and to all of y'all that engaged with our extra special Osprey giveaway this past week. We gave away a 40-liter transporter duffel, which is one of the ones that I travel around the world with every year. And next week, thanks to Osprey, we're going to be giving away the hydration pack that I ride with and race with year-round. That's the Duro 1.5. Pick your size, and all you have to do is play our Friday quiz this coming week. Just go to The Adventure Stash Instagram. Answer all three questions in the Instagram stories quiz correctly, and you're entered to win that Osprey Duro 1.5. So go have fun. Thanks to all of y'all that have tuned in and followed that Instagram account. That's honestly the best way to stay up to date with all things Adventure Stash at this point. And that's all I got. We'll catch you next week. Thanks as always for listening.